It's the Big Interview.
All right, boys, prepare to be dazzled.
Thinking big, living big, talking big with market strategists, money managers, economists, authors, and more.
This is big news. What's going on here? This is big news. We need coverage of this.
Long chats with big brains, meant to give you a better view of the big picture as money life goes literally.
Go big or go.
Talking.
Yes, we are, and we're talking today with Will Naskovitz. He is the president of Heartland Advisors and the Heartland Funds. He's portfolio manager for Heartland Select Value and Heartland Mid Cap Value. And if you are not familiar with Heartland Advisors, you're going to go to heartlandadvisors.com. One thing I will tell you that you're going to like about their website is that they do not hide that they eat their own cooking. You hear us talk about this all the time, that you want to invest with managers who have the courage of their convictions. And one of the ways you know that is, are they investing in their funds? Which is details that get buried in prospectuses, and you have to go rooting around for it, or you have to go to somebody like Morningstar. And they basically, when they tell you what their investment process is, they say, look, our people, you know, we own about $35 million in our funds as of their last disclosure date. And, you know, the firm itself is running $1.7 billion. They also are great at disclosing their investment process. So since I don't want to get too bogged down in that, I'm going to tell you what. We're going to link directly to their 10 principles of value investing. If you go find Will Naskovitz on the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page, we'll have a link to the Heartland Advisors.com site specifically that covers their 10 principles of value investing. But right now, let's get down to it. Will Naskovitz, welcome to Money Life.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, that investment process is basic Graham and Dodd adjusted a little bit, but Graham and Dodd value. And we are talking about a market right now where everything's at record highs. Now, look, over time, we always want to see record highs. It means things are moving in the right place and the right direction. But when you're a value manager, record highs can make it awfully tough to find things to buy. So is it awfully tough for you to find things to buy right now?
I think in some cases, at a high level, that's true. But there have been in the market, there's probably been two bear markets through this up cycle. We like to look at Ned Davis's work on this. They referenced the 2011 timeframe and the 2015 timeframe for the S&P 500. Two bear markets in this this bull, secular bull, I guess you like to call it that. Small caps, there's definitely been a lot more bear markets. I don't know how many offhand, but certainly the Russell 2000 has had its ups and downs since the March 2009 bottom in the S&P 500 for the broader markets. And then certain sectors certainly have been challenged. And one that we think you're starting to see some more opportunity is on the energy or the commodity side. So I think if we think about our watch list today, they're more populated with some cyclical areas of the marketplace that have perhaps more commodity or energy exposures that, again, we're starting to see where we think the outlook is actually improving.
What would be the sectors and the areas where the outlook is improving beyond, as you noted, commodities? Are there specific industries right now that are turning the corner, or is it more just that they've got more room to run?
I think particularly in the broader commodity patch, things are turning the corner. We're just focusing on the energy side. You know, we've had crude oil rally quite a bit off the lows of 2016. Obviously, we're not at the levels that we saw in the 2014 time when oil peaked out in July of $100 and then cracked all the way down to the upper 20s. But right now, because of the decline in inventories, the OPEC constraint, a much more resilient demand environment than I think just about every agency or oil watcher, commodity watcher is looking for, that, you know, the outlook looks pretty good there. So I think in particular, whether it's in the energy service side or perhaps some transportation related companies that will benefit from increased activity, I think in particular that's what stands out to us.
From the perspective of how long this market has run and what we have seen, there's an interesting question going on. And we know that bull markets don't die of old age. And we know that there's not anything that's really foreseeable, you know, no minus missiles flying or things along those lines, that seems to be on the horizon that is a trigger for some sort of really negative event. But is there something that you worry about that could cause the end to the bull market? Or do we not actually need a trigger event for that to happen?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that things that, you know, keep me up at night, and that's probably a little bit too much of an exaggeration, but look, corporate debt to GDP is probably at or above the levels that we saw in 2007. Sentiment is elevated. I think the recent survey out of the University of Michigan in terms of consumers expecting the stock market to be up at a new all-time high, that's usually a contrarian indicator, if you will. And valuations, clearly, as I think you were referencing earlier, certainly aren't as attractive as they once were. Now, broadly speaking, there are some pockets of undervalued companies, as I think, you know, we look for more in that cyclical commodity-related areas that we're looking at a more normalized basis. There's some opportunities. So those are the things we're watching. We're going to continue to watch those things, but we're trying to keep it, you know, stock-specific, if you will. And given that we are, you know, later innings in this economic cycle, I guess we take the view that we did have a mild recession coming out of the 2014 timeframe, where I think there really was a manufacturing recession, which perhaps has now prolonged the cycle to some extent. But it's hard to not argue that we're late innings here. So we really want to be mindful of not all of our principles, but one that's standing out to us is financial soundness. So because we don't know. We do know, though, that it has been a long cycle. Leverage is up. Sentiment is elevated. Valuations are high. So, you know, to protect to the downside, you know, limiting that financial risk, if you will, thinking about balance sheets and thinking about companies that can, you know, survive and thrive in perhaps a weaker economic environment, although that's not on the horizon right now, but it's eventual things. We go through cycles. That's something that we're very focused on here and always have been.
You guys are also always very focused on domestic investing. Most of the guests who have been on this show of late have said not that they expect anything bad to happen domestically, but they expect better returns coming internationally. Do you agree or disagree that foreign markets are poised to produce better returns? And are you going to go after some of that return by perhaps increasing your concentration on multinationals? So in other words, you get the best of the domestic market with more exposure through their business lines to international markets.
Well, I think that's probably a safe bet. And look, we've got our Heartland International Fund here. It's more focused on small cap companies. Bob Sharp, Mike Jolin lead that product, had a great year last year. And they love to reference the gap between the performance of, say, the MSCI US versus the MSCI World ex-US. And eventually, you know, you'll see that catch up. And certainly valuations would be supportive of that as well. I mean, thinking about the S&P 500 at, what is it, 19 times next year, nearly 19 times EPS estimates. That's certainly above the long-term average, call it 16 and a half or so. I think if you were to draw that valuation comparison for the international markets, it certainly would be a lower multiple. And I think that does, when I think about your question on finding opportunities in a multinational standpoint, one of our, you know, I think about, you know, we own in, it's not a multinational, it's a small cap material company called Major Drilling that trades on the Toronto, ticker MDI. These guys are the picks and shovels for the mining universe as they need to ramp up their reserves because there's been just a lack of drilling activity as the commodity market burst, you know, call it the 2011 timeframe, 2014 timeframe for the energy patch, if you will. There just hasn't been a lot of activity. Now with gold, you know, percolating, copper certainly ramping up aggressively, people are building out their budgets for 2018 and beyond, and there's going to be a significant uptick. That's good for Major Drilling. And what we like about them, back to the balance sheet, they're in a net cash position, yet they've been investing in their business to be ready for this upturn. So we see a company today that's probably trading, you know, 50% below what we think would be in a normalized valuation for it as activity picks up, as miners ramp up their exploration activities.
What are you moving away from because the valuations are getting high and you, as you apply the 10 principles, go, I got to make a change. I can't keep with this.
I think you just got to be really keep it security specific. You know, what is being discounted in a particular stock? We love to track, for instance, what's the price action relative to the EPS trend. And, you know, we rewind the clock back on a couple of our bigger holdings today. You know, go back a couple of years ago for the Select Value Fund, American Express was on its back. People were very concerned about them losing their Costco contract. People were concerned about the banks ramping up their own card activities and creating a pricing environment that would be unfriendly to American Express, et cetera. But the stock set back meaningfully. It was discounting a fair amount of negative EPS trends that we thought it was an attractive buy. And certainly it has responded very favorably for our shareholders. So we're going to continue to look at every stock, whether even if it's a financial like an American Express or an energy company in particular, or an industrial, or whatever it may be, we want to find those where there's, you know, perhaps a contrarian bent, where the overhang is being overemphasized, if you will. And then we're going to fall back on our other principles in terms of that financial soundness in particular today to make sure that we're protecting to the downside. So there's not one area of the market, Chuck, that really jumps out to me and that screams as overvalued, if you will. I mean, people point the finger at consumer staples or utilities, but the reality is there's pockets of opportunities in each of those sectors too. So we're going to be looking for ideas that are hitting the majority of our 10 principles, regardless of what sector they're in. There's always a bull market somewhere, in my opinion.
Well, we appreciate that opinion. We will check back in with you maybe later this year to find out where that bull market has shifted to and what's going on with it. Will, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Will Nazkowicz is the president of the Heartland Funds and Heartland Advisors. If you want more information, go to heartlandadvisors.com, on Twitter at Heartland Funds. All right, we just hit the halfway, Paul, on the January 25th edition of Money Life. But that means we're only halfway in. We've barely gotten started. Come on. So settle back and relax. Don't touch a mouse, a button, anything. This is Money Life, and we'll be right back with more.